This is Rakovic's After Hours.
Welcome to the delightfully short podcast entitled Ben's Lyric of the Week. This week, is that Kevin in the car? He's a cabbage like me. Wonderful stuff. Of course, this is really Rack Addicts After Hours, the music and technology podcast, episode 129. Good golly, that's a few that we have done in it, Pete.
Yes, it is.
Oh me, oh my. What have you been up to this week?
I have been, well, at least trying to cope with the wonderful oscillations in temperature.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we've been going sort of 30 degrees one day, 18 degrees the next day, back up to 28 degrees the following day. It's all
it's
over the place.
It's good for my plants. It's good for my plants.
But other than that, I have been starting to prepare the room that we're actually sitting in.
So it begins.
Yes, the studio move is going to start
awesome, Dad,
occurring.
Let's just go for, so it begins. That's better. Awesome. What's task one?
Well, the first task is to take the new kitchen cabinetry, which is occupying most of this room.
Is that what's been there for every single time I've ever been in this room ever?
Mostly, yes. And then install that in the kitchen, which will clear this space. And then I've got to remove the hideous brick.
Oh, yeah.
1980s fireplace, which
I've seen worse.
Yeah. I had an estate agent. I had an estate agent look at this house, maybe 18 years ago, and even then they said, you need to get rid of that. It's so dated and horrible.
Fair
but it's just a horrible behemoth of red bricks sort of glued to the wall.
Oh, yeah, you said it's not even tied into the outside of the house.
No, it's not physical. It's a 1980s construction house, so this is all just dry lined with,
right,
and that fireplace is just sort of stacked against the wall and there is a flue sort of behind it. Anyway, that needs to go. We need to clear the whole area, remove carpets, lay an oak floor, and then soundproofing. Well, not soundproofing, sound
acoustic treatment.
Acoustic
That's
treatment.
The stuff.
So I envisage acoustic panels and a cloud
Lovely.
Sort of over by the French windows somewhere.
Wonderful. What's job two? Or the most immediate job that you can't quite do at the moment? Is it going to be fireplace? Is that going to be round two?
I mean, mostly it is shuffling things around because I have so little space because I've got so much equipment.
Oh yeah, it's going to be a bit of a move that one there so that can move there and then that one can go over there and finally you can put that thing right where it was supposed to be.
Like one of those little slidey puzzles when you have to slide the squares and shapes to get the right picture or pattern.
Tricky.
Yes, but we've broken ground on it.
Awesome.
So that's happening. I've also had a little gas flutter.
Ooh. Was the trigger pulled?
A trigger was pulled and a product will be arriving tomorrow.
Give me some clues. Let's see if I can get close.
It's square.
Okay.
And it is green.
Square and green.
But there is also a bit of yellow there as well.
Is it the East Beast or the West Pest?
No.
It's not one of those. Okay, I think there is green in one of them. Anyway, not that. Eurorack module?
No.
No? Okay. If it's a guitar or instrument pedal of some kind, I'm not well versed in those.
It's not a pedal.
Ooh.
But it kind of looks like it might be if you
green.
Didn't know quite what it was.
Genre of green. Leafy plant green or deep dark green?
Leafy plant sort of maybe going slightly darker. It depends on what leaf you're talking about really, doesn't it?
No, I've got nothing. Break it to me.
Right. It's the Otto Machines BAM.
Oh, cool. Yeah, no, I wouldn't have called that. Amazing. Wait, that is compressor?
No, it is a...
Which one's that?
It's a classic 1970s / 1980s emulation of things like, I would imagine, lexicons and so
it's
forth.
Oh, the reverb. Gotcha. Yeah, is it boom? Must be the compressor distortion-y thing.
Yeah, I would expect so. I don't know. I haven't really paid attention to the other two units. I just want the reverb.
Awesome.
Ever since I saw it on Christian Henson's channel, I think about a year ago, and he was really extolling how wonderful it was. I have wanted one. I was doing a bit of that last minute reinforcement that you do before you make a purchase decision and you reach out to YouTube and watch a few more videos to try and get you
forums.
Over the line. And there wasn't a whole lot there. There is quite a few people using it, but there weren't any of the critiques from the usual suspects.
Right.
So none of apart from Christian and himself, nobody of the hardware review fraternity.
Interesting.
Seems to have talked about it at any stage. And it is slightly obscure. There's not that many retailers that actually sell them in the UK anyway.
I wouldn't say that they're that niche as an idea. But yeah, the company not got as much representation as you might want.
Yeah, I'm certainly looking forward to get my hands on it. And I'm intending to use it with a lot of different devices. But the end goal, I believe, will be to put it with the UDO Super 6 when that arrives.
Delish. Ooh, is an order in?
It's progressing. Let's put it that way. It's a bit of a torturous process, but something should be happening possibly by August.
Did you get hold of the one dude that was ignoring you?
I have referred it to someone more senior to deal with.
Amazing. Okay, cool. Oh, any more updates from the week?
I think that's just about it. The preparation for this space to sort of bring the full studio in here is what is taking all my time.
It's a logistical problem.
But I see this project going on for several months.
Gotcha.
Until it's complete, because there's a lot of blocks to put in place.
I mean, yeah, when you're doing a floor, everything will have to be out of here.
So it'll have to be stripped. There's going to be all sorts of accoutrements installed, because at this end, I want the full podcasting.
This will be it. Okay.
YouTubing video suite.
Excellent.
And then the other end of the room will be all the music production.
Yeah. Synths in the middle.
Yes.
Awesome.
Lining the walls.
Precast, as we so often start rambling, forget to press the red button and go, oh, no, save that. We were talking about the dreaded black cloth.
Yes.
That we had in that one place with the birds a few episodes ago, that one time. Is that going to be this window and that window? Is that the idea?
No, I've got drapes that are going to replace the ones that are here at the moment, but I thought that I have some sort of maybe trilight, you know, the sort of triangular trussing, but the small diameter some sort of framework, so a little stage thing that can be collapsed and taken down, but it would be semi-permanent, and any of the backdrops or anything would be on that.
Aha.
So gotcha. I want to make the room configurable.
Yes.
And also the trussing would also be used for lighting.
The YouTube threat is real.
Yes.
Awesome. That is great news. We will keep you updated as things progress. Exciting stuff. My week has been sporty. This is weird. I never thought I was a sporty person. So I got a rather scary email from the chap who runs the squash stuff at my squash club. He goes, Ben, how would you like to play for the first team? Now, I've been playing in the fourths, which has been fine. Maybe I should be somewhere in the thirds. But the firsts? No way! These are seasoned county veterans and horrifyingly skilled players. So I was there for an absolute thrashing, which wasn't entirely fun. There is a website, I think I might have mentioned a few podcasts ago, called Squash Levels, which gives you a number of points equal to your skill, which will go up and down on the league matches and the interclub stuff. And my goal was to get as many extra points by playing this incredibly able player. So I will let you know if that worked. The other part of my squashing this week was actually testing some rackets out. And, well, it was quite like going into a music shop and trying out some guitars or something. So the brand rep for this was Caracal. I think there might even be an English company. Either way, Caracal's rep very kindly set up a session where I could try basically all of their rackets. And in much the same way as playing a guitar will make you say strange words, think, ooh, yes, this one feels soupy or something, you know. It was that kind of thing. I was trying to describe to myself how these rackets were different. That was a fun experience to try and lever my words around them. I think I described one as unpleasantly zingy. It wasn't a citrus drink, it was a squash racket. And another one feeling a bit more direct. But interestingly, for our music and sound-related people, the word transparent came up. In studio monitors, at least, you want transparent so that you kind of forget the speakers are there. You're really listening to the sounds you're creating or something. In this case, with a squash racket, your arm blends smoothly with the strange graphite frame. I don't know, but it just felt like there wasn't an implement between me and the strange squash ball. It was a very odd experience, but I enjoyed it.
Okay. How torturous was your experience of playing in the first team?
It wasn't as bad as it could have been. I think my shots were still decent enough to not bore the guy to death, but the legs really, really weren't there at all. Not even close. There's a huge, huge fitness gap. that I just couldn't survive.
I'm surprised with all your cycling. I thought you'd be on your game, so to speak.
Yeah, the good thing is I can kind of remember and I can kind of see where my ability was when I look at certain players. And I'm pretty sure I was that fit once when I was at school and playing a lot. But it's going to be a lot of effort to try and get back there, because I was playing 6 days a week when I was doing that, so yeah, but I would like to get there again. Anyway, there goes all of the squash stuff, but there is more sport yet to talk about. I mentioned that I was going to attempt to cycle 100 miles, I believe, last episode.
Yes, you did.
And I did it. 101.7, in fact, which went surprisingly well, and I'm also not feeling it at all. Equally surprising. The rear is in one piece, and the legs still function. It was all right. A little bit lonely, and I did the Downs Link, so it was there and back, and quite straight and boring, so not thrilling, but I'm pleased that I made it.
When do you get your badge?
I think 30th of June is when the link to claim it goes live, and I assume it's add this code at checkout to add it on to an existing order or something, but you know, whatever. We'll see.
At least you did it.
At least I did it. I did indeed. Two more bits that I shall get through. ModCaf is tomorrow, and we may have some Pete in there, which will be great. We do definitely have quite a lot of people contributing to this CAF. We have our Gabba friend Simon doing something. Finn from the last CAF, who did one of his first proper big electronic performances, is going to be ambientonizing himself this one. And we also have Telmo and his partner from Egypt doing two little performances, one involving a plant and the other one involving Ableton Push.
I was hoping they were going to bring their plant thingy along.
The plant thingy is happening. I'm quite excited. And we also have Ben, not me Ben, not the other Ben, but the third Ben, who's going to be doing something. He has an interesting setup in... His setup is really quite contemporary electronic music focused. And by that I mean more obviously song-oriented songs. So he... I know he's dabbled with MPCs for lots of sample-based bits. He's had some of his own singing on there and synths alongside. So rather than the super weird, it's all hardware-based, but quite accessible, which does add a bit of variety into what we get sometimes at the CAF. So that'll be cool. Finally, more updates in the camera world. I have some extra supplies for my big negative scanathon now that I've tested some bits out, sorted the issues I was having with the blue channel and other colour such doodads. I've got little cotton gloves so I can hold my negatives and not worry about fingerprints. I've got a little air blowery thing and some sort of anti-static microfibery situations. And spirit levels for hot shoe attachment to make the camera as square as possible so I don't have to use the actually quite useful perspective crop tool in Photoshop.
I have got something for you here in relation to that.
Oh my.
Cop these.
I see canisters of film. Oh my. Let me
so in
here.
Theory, they are all unused.
Oh really? No way. Oh man. Okay, what have we got here? Kodak Ultra 36, 400, I think a 400 ISO, maybe. Oh man, I'm going to have to do some Googling. This is amazing. What have we got?
So they're for you.
You're too kind to me. Let's have a look. Are they all? Do you know if they're all going to be the... Oh, no. We've got some green in here. What's going on? ISO 100, made in Germany. Color print film, Underwood. For best results, return exposed film to Underwood for processing. C41. Exciting. I'm going to have to do some extensive Googling to try and find information and dates. Oh, this has a nice little punch out in the leader. That's quite cool.
I have no idea how old those film canisters are.
Your roughest guess at when they might have
No idea.
Up. Absolutely no idea.
No.
Okay.
I acquired them in London yesterday.
Okay.
I was helping sort some stuff out for a house move.
Oh, right. Okay. And then, another Kodak Ultra 36. Fascinating. Right, we're going to do some live Googlage here. Let's see what we can find out. The good thing is, because so many different film stocks have been discontinued, it should be easy to find kind of dates that they might have been around. So, Kodak Ultra 36. Okay, so Ultra Max is the thing that's around. What about Kodak Ultra? I'm going to have to give everybody a top tip for Googling. If you want to exclude a term from a search, if you put a little minus sign in front of the thing, type in the thing, so I'm going to do minus Ultra Max, because that's a currently produced doodad, that should filter out the Ultra Max. Okay, I'm also going to filter out Ultra, no, not Ultra, because I need that, Max on its own. Oh, here we go. We're getting some stuff. Some vintage stuff. on eBay. 36 is probably just because it's got 36 exposures. This is based on how other people are kind of labeling these. This could be Kodak Ultra GC. And for... Ooh, here we go. So, photographyreview.com says Kodak Ultra Gold 400 GC print film. Okay, I think we're going to need a bit more Googling, see if I can have an estimate on the age of that guy. The rule of thumb for shooting expired film... Do these have expiry dates on them? They might do. Can't see. Either way, it's overexposed by one stop per decade, apparently. But we shall see. So this guy... This is... Let's go Underwood UX135-24. No, that's just going to be 135 and 24 exposures, this one. UX color print. Let's put that on there, see what happens. Okay, that's not helped at all. I will report back when I have found informations.
I suspect they're older than 20 years.
Older than 20 years. Okay. So it could be, more light, overexposed. Yeah, so a couple of stops, and overexposing film works quite well anyway. So three stops, because why not? Very exciting. That's very kind of you, Pete. Thank you many times.
They were only going to be thrown out.
We shall see. I'll get them in the fridge, and I'll let you know when I know. It could be a while, but I shall see. Actually, I can't remember if I said I was going to get this might be cut out. Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe doing a little bit of a photography night excursion with Mr. Hartley at some point. So I could bring one of those along, maybe one of the Kodaks, see what happens. Right. Very exciting stuff. There is some news in the synth world today. Have I mentioned Ouroboros Electronics in this podcast before?
Not that I recall.
I hope I did, because there was a really cool banana synth with no real labeling on the panel that made some nice bubbly noises that I found a good while ago. So that's the Alea, A-L-E-A. But they've come out with another one which has touch panels, and it's the Alea Taction, T-A-C-T-I-O-N. And let me... yes, I am connected to the Rodecaster. Can I grab a bit of volume on there, please?
With the Bluetooth?
Yeah. Taken from the Ouroboros Electronics YouTube channel. So, here is what they say. A new iteration of the classic Alea with the additional touch plates as well as new aesthetics and enclosure. Let's have a look at the speckaroonies here. Touch plates can be used to control the dynamics of each voice, bend and affect the pitch of the oscillators, affect the cross-modulation of the voices, modulate the wave shapers, affect the shift register, and so on. Of course you can do whatever you want, because it's a modular synthesizer. So, two-voice, sine-wave oscillators with wave shapers, low-pass gates, LFOs, and a stochastic shift register-based sequencer, and three touch plates. Awesome. So, if you kind of like the vibe of Seattlon Bard stuff, but you want it to be not as horrifyingly expensive and potentially a bit more normal in sound, go check it out on ouroboroselectronics.com. Ouroboros-electronics.com, in fact. It is a little pricey, but for a one-person operation, not too bad. Ooh, there are DIY options as well. So, you can get PCB and faceplate sets, and there will be a BOM. That's cool.
Any prices?
Yes. Let me just go find the price for the built bad boy. Where did I have it? Not there. Here? Yes. 758 euros.
Okay.
So that's quite pricey. Let me show you a picture.
Right. Is that a wooden...
Wooden enclosure.
Okay. Is that...
Not a super fancy one, but it's wooden nonetheless.
Is it your rack mountable?
No. Very much standalone, and it is bananas. Banana jacks.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was quite an interesting demo, though. I like the...
It sounds very nice.
Sort of high end with the sub together. Yeah. I always like that type of effect. It's
definitely
got a lot not a presence.
I've actually exchanged quite a few emails with the chap behind Ouroboros a while ago, and a very nice chap. So go and check it out. I think they're really cool. Now for something much less cool in my eyes, but it's a big thing that's quite interesting. The Akai Pro MPC Key 61. It's an MPC slapped into a giant keyboard. Now, workstation keyboards are possibly the most hated category, in my opinion, in the high-tech kind of corner of the music world, because I don't understand the customer. Most of the time, when I was in the shop, it was always an older gentleman who didn't seem to quite trust computers that wanted to record things and was quite a capable piano player, and that was kind of it.
Yes, the trouble is those type of machines are trying to tick a lot of boxes generally. So people come in and maybe they want something for stage where they can easily access the presets and maybe have an extreme amount of multi-timbralism.
Yeah, that does often come with these, doesn't it?
And invariably, if it is one of these gentlemen that you describe, they want to be able to compose tracks completely on the keyboard itself and have nothing to do with the computer.
Yeah. Interesting. I wonder if that's what they're trying to do, is interrupt that market a bit, or if they're just trying to have a keyboard option sort of to go with the rest of the MPCs. I don't know. It's an odd choice.
I think I seem to remember that Akai have had large keyboards in the past.
Yeah, outside of their controllers, I don't really know.
I'm talking like this a kind long of time thing. Ago.
Oh, like a long time,
I mean,
right.
Yeah, I seem to remember that there was possibly, when they were doing their rack mount samplers, there was a keyboard around at that time, and the MPC is obviously an evolution of their original S range of samplers.
Definitely. So their kind of tagline is, the most advanced and integrated standalone system available for today's modern music creators. Those customers don't seem like modern music creators to me, the ones I described. So I guess they're going for MPC people.
Yeah, maybe they just think, well, we're just going to add a keyboard and give it some functionality rather than the need to plug in a MIDI keyboard. I got the impression, I could be wrong, that there was a bit more to it than just sort of the MPC side of things. I thought they had added something.
I had a read through, but I couldn't find like what was exciting and new.
So I would assume then it's just running the same operating system as the MPCs.
It seems so. So what was the big one with the tilty screen?
The X.
MPC X. So that one had lots of CV and gate, which the keyboard has as well, which is cool.
I thought the MPC one had got quite a bit of CV.
I think it does, but I can't remember off the top of my head. Let's have a look at the IO. Here it is. We've got, is that two? Oh no, I've broken it all. Come back, picture. So we've got four outputs, headphones, two preamps, USB and networking stuff, eight CV gate, MIDI and out and through, expression, foot switch, and sustain. Come on, what? There's got to be something super exciting that's here. I don't know. I can't figure out why it exists.
There must be some sort of rationale. The business minds in Akai have got together and decided this is a product that needs to be made. And hence they've made it, and now I've got to sell it. I haven't seen one in the flesh yet.
Oh, it could be one of those that just takes forever to turn up, isn't it?
Possibly, but it has been discussed in the shop, so I think it's imminent.
Yeah, I think it's just the sort of top-end MPC stuff shoehorned into a giant keyboard. I know more recently they've done a lot of software updates in terms of the virtual instruments that they can run, synth engines and stuff, but I don't know if there's any more of that here.
No, it'll be the same OS. I assume it's got the same large LCD screen on
it. Yep, and it's also got the 16 pads, and it's got a bunch of encoders that you have on the live, as well as extra buttons as well, I think. Yep, cool. That's a thing. If you're interested, it's there. And, I mean, to be honest, in the shop, trying to demo a Kronos or one of the newest Phantoms that I never really cared about was always a nightmare. But the MPC stuff was always super easy to use, so I would not complain that something actually usable is now in a giant keyboard workstation shape.
Yeah, I have to say, some of those large stage piano type keyboards chords are a bit obtruse when you start menu diving.
Yeah, they can be. I remember the montage, the Yamaha flagship one. I remember that being fine because it didn't do as much of the recording sequencing stuff, but the Kronos was just a nightmare.
I would say the montage does more.
Does it?
Yeah, if you dig, it does way more than the Kronos. Well, I could be wrong.
I've been mis-selling them for years.
Well, the Kronos is end of life anyway, and it's now the Nautilus is the...
Indeed.
And that...
Now you can find out when I left music retail.
There's even less control surface on that. That's almost a kind of homage to the Korg M1.
Oh, yeah.
The way it's got a very sleek exterior with minimal buttons.
Yeah.
But it still has the same screen as the Kronos.
Oh, the kind of slow, resistive touchscreen.
Yeah, and the actual graphics look very similar.
Yeah. Anyway, here we go for some modular time. Noise Engineering, a company we do like. Indeed, we do like them. They have the Versio range, which I think are 8HP effects platforms, and it's the swap out the firmware so you can get one module to do a bunch of different things, which is super cool, stereo processory style stuff. Now, we've got a new series that will do the same thing, alternative firmwares and such. These are Legio or Legio, depending on how you feel like attempting to pronounce the Latin that they go for. These ones are, I don't know if I've already said, because my memory is terrible, 6HP, and you've got, how many have we got? Is that just two? Just two at the moment, two firmwares and two faceplates corresponding with which one you wanted to ship with. You have Vert Eater Legio, which is a stereo oscillator with three algorithms that initially turned up with the Microfreak stuff. They are Bass, Saw X, and Harm. So you've got some interesting sounds in there, and I think I've already mentioned stereo, we do like that. The other option is Libri Legio, which is a stereo dynamics processor, limiting compression, expansion, and other strange, weird stuff. As usual with Noise Engineering, it will probably go further than is pleasant to listen to, which can be awesome. It looks like there's a lot of gain staging going on in Libri Legio, but you can do that in dual mono as well as stereo. So that's cool stuff. My question for you, Pete, is... Actually, yeah, you've definitely got modules like this. Let's say it will be an Ornament and Crime or a Clouds where you can swap out a firmware. Ooh, and it does new stuff. Do you care?
No.
Or, okay, cool, you're like me where you put a firmware on it and there the firmware stays for the rest of time and you never change it because it's a massive hassle. How would you like it to be done so that it was actually a two modules for one, three modules for the price of one type situation?
Well, you're saying that you'd have to do a firmware update flash to get it to function in one of the other modes.
Exactly. How would you like that to happen with a module to remove the friction of actually doing it?
A switch?
Just literally a switch.
Yeah, or all the functions are just there and you can just select them.
Actually, a small two or three-way switch would work nicely, just out of the way somewhere, so you don't accidentally nudge it.
So it points to the appropriate bit of firmware, possibly, but that would mean more memory, most probably more CPU power
required. Okay, you don't have the memory to do that. What else would work?
SD card?
Yeah, if you could hot swap some SDs, you could just do a little box of them next to your modular, swap them in and out. That would work quite nicely.
Like the Tip Top Audio DSP?
Yeah, of course. That was a good one. They got stolen from the shop, which was annoying.
Okay, I didn't know that, but...
I think they did anyway. They just disappeared one day. So, yeah.
That
would work. Yeah, I think as annoying as having an app would be, a little applet would be acceptable as well, but either doing the really annoying... audio gargle into an input thing or taking the module out, plugging it in via USB. I can't do it.
I can never be bothered. Case in point would be with more my mutable instrument stuff. People said, have you put the X whatever firmware
parasites on? Or whatever they're called.
I can't be bothered.
Yeah. It's, I guess, why... I can't remember which came first. It was Radio Music first and then Chord Organ.
Yeah.
I just bought two so I could have both. Didn't bother changing the firmwares.
I have a Chord Organ and I'm considered on many occasions flashing it as a...
back into a Radio Music.
Yeah, because I haven't really used it as a Chord Organ at all.
Yeah. It is cool, and I really appreciate being able to have firmware updates quite easily and obviously getting more for your money, but I would like an easy option. Let's see how Noise Engineering do it, because I don't think it's that easy.
Well, on the radio music and the chord organ, it's just a case of attaching the Tinsy CPU to your PC and using the utility. It's really quick, but when it's that kind of modem squelch audio mode of flashing the firmware, that's just... it's not that hard, but it's not that inspiring typically.
It looks like it's the same situation here. USB the module into your computer and flash something on.
It's kind of not so bad, but generally you want modules to be, you buy them for what they actually are, and you just want it to be its thing and do its thing in your setup.
Audience, you know, we're on Facebook and Instagram. Find us there and give us your opinions. How would you like alternate firmwares to become easier? It's my question for you this week. And now our final news article. Pete, you know how you've been nagging me for so many years. You've always wanted 11 iLoud MTM monitors and one of their measurement microphones at the same time.
No.
Well, you have. Of course you have, because now you can buy them all at the same time for a budget Atmos setup.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know why. So, Atmos is 7.1.2, so that's actually 9 speakers. That's the minimum to get it to work, I think. 7 surround channels and 2 height channels and a sub. This kit gives you 11 speakers and no sub.
Is this just for listening pleasure or for some sort of work?
I guess they're going... If it was going to be pleasure, home theatre stuff, no sub is ridiculous. You have to have a sub for that kind of thing. I assume they're going for somebody who's a studio sound design composer type person working with that kind of media, has a studio, and actually has ended up working with Atmos, and they want to be able to monitor it, but they're not going to either pay studio hire fees just for sort of checking mixes. They'd rather do it in their own home, but they don't want to shell out on, you know, buying 5-7 more Genelex or something. Or it's just an enthusiast thing. Those are the only customers here.
How many enthusiasts are going to be buying a
Atmos? I don't know. This reminds me of a frustration that I have when I'm on the tube in London, because they have their little billboard things, and there's a bunch of them for various artists on Apple Music. And then it says, now with Dolby Atmos on the bottom. Why? Dolby Atmos on Apple Music or iTunes or whatever it is now. But everybody... Apple serves their music to customers on headphones and frequently listening out of a phone speaker. Why? They're just using the Dolby Atmos tagline to be like, ooh, check this out, high-tech audio things. Or are they actually doing something with it? I'm very confused.
Surely the pieces of music would have to have been produced through an Atmos system to be all correct. So are they just shoving stereo and doing something digital to it to make it come out of that many speakers and be effective?
I highly doubt it'll be effective. It's just very confusing.
I mean, do people have those sort of systems at home for home theatres? I mean, they've most probably got the 5.1s or that type of thing, possibly.
Yeah, 5 or 7.1 home theatres. Maybe you've got people doing Atmos, maybe, but it's got to be a tiny market. Okay, I'm going to see if I can Google what Apple's thinking. Okay, Apple Music, now in Dolby Atmos. Immersive audio experience on all devices. This is going to be terrible. Let's find out, shall we?
How can it be in all devices? Unless they're doing some sort of weird binaural thing to it and calling it.
Yeah, okay, so on certain Apple audio devices, that's going to be AirPods Pro, AirPods Max, AirPods Beats Fit Pro, AirPods first or second generation, Beats X, you know, all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It says it will work with those with spatial audio turned on. Does it? Is it just head tracking and binaural stuff?
How could you do head tracking? I mean,
it would have to just be accelerometer based, and that's why it would only work with the newest Apple tiny wireless things. I don't even know if they've got accelerometers in. I'm just assuming. So, yeah, it's spatial audio with dynamic head tracking. Yes, that is available.
Unless you have to keep your head very still.
Who knows? What if it is just a really kind of cheap binaural mix?
I can't think it could be anything else. If you're in a cinema situation where you're going to get the Dolby Atmos experience, you're generally going to be facing forward and you're not going to be moving your head a lot.
Yeah.
So it's a fixed experience supplied by multiple speakers. But maybe Dolby have been working on a kind of binaural way of taking stereo tracks and infusing them with some sort of binaurality, if that's a word.
So I'm reading all of these articles and they're saying, well, they're using the Atmos thing. Oh, it's not channel-based, it's point-based or whatever. Cool. But the playback is channel-based. It's always, in these consumer things, it's always two channels. So why are you bothering? I'm just so confused. Somebody tell me I'm an idiot, because this just seems like a huge waste of time. So, yeah, that on some devices you can get the head tracking thing, which will add that gimmick of, ooh, I can turn my head and suddenly the drums are in the wrong place. So that's a feature, I suppose. Okay, I'm going to get a trial of Apple Music and try it out. I'm going to report back, I think, for next podcast, because I'm just so confused. There we go. It's time for what YouTube channel has Pete found this week? I mean, the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. Is it in fact a YouTube channel, Pete?
Of course.
Oh, wonderful. Take it away.
Right. On various occasions, I have recommended tutorial channels. Basically,
indeed,
piano tutorial channels of different styles.
Mm-hmm.
One particular channel that has caught my interest is Piano Annie Blues and Boogie Woogie Piano. In it, she explains those genres of music, but she does it quite well by breaking down into manageable chunks. So she'll feature possibly some right-hand blues licks or some left-hand rhythmic parts, and then describes how to put those together. And as I'm always seeking to try and improve my greatest failing when it comes to piano, which is the syncopated rhythmic
tricky
two-hand coordination type things, it's right up my street. So that's it, folks. Basically, this week's multimedia recommendation is the YouTube channel Piano Annie Blues and Boogie Woogie Piano.
Nice one. Last episode, if you tuned in, you'll know that I was wondering about The Expanse, the series made based on the James S.A. Corey series of books, Leviathan Wakes and such, and I have started watching it. It's decent so far, and I would recommend it, an all right watch. What's most interesting is, it's a little tricky because I've kind of forgotten what happened in the first book, but watching the interpretations of the technologies that exist in the books, and the kind of weird accent situation that some of the people from the asteroid belts have. It's quite cool. There's sort of this weird mix of sort of a South African and Gaelic and also Spanish thing going on. It's quite cool. The only letdown so far is, I'd say, it's the main kind of technology computer phone type alternative in the books is just described as a terminal, a hand terminal, a terminal on a wall in a spaceship or whatever. And this is something that's in so many different sci-fi genres in some form. So in this particular one, people just have a little pocket portrait glass looking thing. I assume the practical prop was just a bit of glass with tracking widgets on it so they could do all the CG animated stuff later. So they'll have big glass panels in their homes that they'll just casually flick content onto with a gesture. And I can't put my finger on why I hate it. I feel like it hasn't done enough to embed itself in the grunge that they've got on some of the asteroid belt type stations there. It's all too clean and bright. I don't know what I would have done differently. But yeah, Pete, you like your sci-fi. That kind of technology, how have you seen it in a film, or maybe in books or audiobooks or something? What's your favourite version of it, if you can think of one?
There's been quite a few good examples of this in the last decade or so with sci-fi movies, and it is either the, as you say, the sheet of glass, which for me was featuring quite heavily in Avatar.
Oh yeah, totally, in the spaceships and stuff. That was all of the displays and such, just glass everywhere.
I believe they might have had some of that in the Marvel films as well. Possibly.
Yeah, I stopped watching them, so I can't comment on that one.
Or the other thing is just a hologram floating in midair, or somehow a screen emerges, a sheet of video emerges into thin air. I'm not really sure. Certainly the ones in Avatar looked quite sexy.
Yeah, no, they, I think, are probably the best that I'm thinking of right now, because I didn't notice them. You know, they just worked. They didn't annoy me like the ones in The Expanse have for some reason I can't quite put my finger on. So yeah, maybe Avatar's Wars kind of top at the moment. I think in the original Star Wars trilogy, and to some extent some of the new Star Trek stuff, because it's a lot more physical, they could have built a practical prop for it. I mean, they probably did, and it was less screens and stuff done after the fact. I think that works better, although obviously not communicating that omni-device type feel that a lot of these IPs are going for.
I think they have to be quite careful in film and television when they show certain technologies, because it's very easy for that technology to get dated, but because the technology gets superseded before the date that the sci-fi was set in. And a good example of that, although it doesn't really detract too badly from the film, I started watching Blade Runner for the umpteenth time.
The original or the new one?
The original one. And obviously all the screens are CRTs.
Yeah, of course.
So it all looks a bit kind of dated. They sort of get away with it because they've got that type of, I don't know what you want to say, steampunky post-apocalyptic kind of cyberpunk thing going on. Mm-hmm. And that particular film is so good that you can kind of overlook it. But some of the stuff they had, it looked great in 1982. Now it looked really creaky.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same with Alien, isn't it? They've got CRTs everywhere.
Very much so.
I think that works a little bit because the aesthetic of that ship is so utilitarian and durability focused, you know. Maybe you think, oh yeah, they're not going to put any fancy technology. They'll just put cheap, reliable stuff on there so it works, maybe.
You kind of had it a little bit with the original Star Wars, but they've been faithful with the really recent films and the recent TV.
Yeah.
And it was the kind of very much late 1970s graphics they had on things like their targeting computers so forth. And there's a certain style to it, but they've kind of stuck with it. At least they've been faithful there. I know with Star Trek, they've had the problem of, you know, because they recently, we've had the movies and the new TV series where they're actually featuring things like the Enterprise and characters from the original 1965 series.
Yeah.
And in 1965, they were literally just pictures stuck on the set.
Yeah.
And then obviously now it's all very lush graphics. I think they've carried it off quite well. So you just go with it. I think you're right. When the technology becomes conspicuous,
that's when it's a problem.
Yeah.
Anyway, despite my confused ramblings about The Expanse, I'm enjoying it, and I would recommend if you happen to have a Prime Video subscription going.
So I would assume that you've started with Series 1.
Indeed, yes. I'm planning to stop when I get to where I am in the books, so I can book and then watch the show afterwards.
Okay.
The James Holden in my head, I definitely prefer the James Holden in my head to the one on the screen at the moment. But he has time to redeem himself, I think, because he's a bit annoying in the beginning anyway.
I think we've said this quite a few times when we've discussed book versus film. And unfortunately, what I believe happens is when you read a book, you paint your own mental pictures, and invariably, quite often, the film can be somewhat of a disappointment.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anything else I've actually read before seeing the film adaptation of... I think I read all the Harry Potters before the films came out.
I thought they did those quite well.
Yeah, but I was reading them as they were coming out as well, so they sort of blended.
Yeah, I had a similar experience. I used to read them to the children when they were little. And also they had J.K. Rowling on tap when they were making the films.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's true, having that integration of the source material, as it were. One thing that is vastly superior to the books is the How to Train Your Dragon series. The books are completely different and have their own charm, but the films are way better.
I can't recall, had you read Dune before you saw part one?
I attempted a good couple of times. At the time, I really wasn't into reading, so I tried the audiobook, and I'm not a fan of what's on Audible anyway. I don't know if there are any other versions. I'm not a fan of that reading. The main narrator's voice is really dull, so I couldn't get into it.
That doesn't help at all.
No. But I have since listened to quite a bit more of it after watching the film, and it's still quite enjoyable, and you just get more detail, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
And it obviously, so far, seems that the film was incredibly faithful. I know we spoke about that when Luke was on a few weeks after we'd all seen it, I think.
Okay.
There we go. That was a very long and rambly recommendation for this week. Thank you for tuning in. And we'll catch you when we've broken the 130 barrier. Farewell.